I never before knew the full value of trees. My house is entirely embosomed in high plane trees with good grass below, and under them I breakfast, dine, write, read, and receive my company. What would I not give that the trees planted nearest round the house at Monticello were full grown? Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Martha Randolph, 1793. I was not prepared to see the pine timber so valuable and heavy as it is above and about here. The trees are of large growth, straight and smooth. With the exception of swamps, which are few and far between, the timberland has all the beauty of a sylvan grove. The entire absence of underbrush and decayed logs lends ornament and attraction to the woods. They are more like the groves around a mansion in their neat and cheerful appearance, and awaken reflections on the muses and the dialogues of philosophers rather than apprehension of wild beasts and serpents. Christopher Columbus Andrews, Minnesota and Dakota, 1856. Part 1. When America's Story Was Dominated by Wood. 1785 to 1805. A View Across the Ridge. Thomas Jefferson was a man with a lifelong fascination with trees. He thought of them as his favourite kind of plants, wrote of them as his pets, and went to much effort and expense to place those he liked best around the great west lawn of Monticello, the home he made for himself in the foothills of the mountains of Albemarle County, Virginia. He was an extravagant man, given to extravagant visions, which Monticello's present-day garden conservators have done much to reproduce. So, just as he wished when he first bought Monticello in 1768, there are today long alleys of willows, great terraces of magnolias, and stands of sugar maples. There are linden trees, mulberries, and honey locusts. There are oaks and pines and pecans, catalpas and ginkgos and chestnuts, sycamores, walnuts, slippery elm, and osage orange and border plantings of persimmons, black gums, and fruit-bearing peach trees. Monticello's fortunes have fluctuated dramatically over the years, not least because the third president's excesses left the estate hopelessly mired in his legacy of debt. For many decades, the house itself was a magnificent ruin. The estate gardens were left to run wild, and the surrounding forests were choked with underbrush. Some of the greater trees survived the rigours of time and neglect, however, and in recent years it became something of a sport to try to say with certainty which of these gnarled monsters Jefferson himself might have planted. It somehow made the country's best-loved founding father ever more human to imagine him out in the garden on a summer's evening, digging the saplings deep into the hilltop's rich, loamy soil, to think of him spreading mulch about their roots and then leaving the shoots to the soothing balms of the warm Virginia rains. An X-ray device, invented by a Dutch arborist, was recently brought in to work out the age of the nobler-looking trees, and there was much exultation on the mountain when four of them could be proved to be at least 200 years old, and thus quite old enough to have been planted by Jefferson. But irony has no respect for antiquity. No sooner had these trees been identified as most probably the work of the man himself, or the small army of slaves he had working on his estate, than all four of them keeled over and died. Two of them were massive but fragile tulip poplars, one of which was fully 10 yards around at its base and had begun to pose a dire threat to the building beside it. The others were a larch and a copper beech, immense shade trees under which the ageing Jefferson was said to have whiled away many of the afternoons of his latter days. To most, there was a gentle poignancy in their passing, because it severed one certain and romantic connection with the man who, above all others, still stands today as the architect of most of the central ideas behind the making of the United States. But one other connection, a small and little-noticed arboreal conceit at Monticello, also links the man and his vision, and quite literally his vision, with those who visit today. It's a small and cleverly created spy hole in the woods that surround Monticello, and it affords visitors a subtle view of their surroundings that in its own way is every bit as inspirational as that which Jefferson, in laying out the plans for his estate, had once designed for himself.